Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave, and welcome to Insights for Health, an evidence-based radio show providing up-to-date information on various health topics. Insights for Health is brought to you by The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street in Chatham, celebrating our 24th year with a tradition of quality nutritional supplements and healthcare products at everyday low prices. So we can help you to help yourself live healthy, live wise, live strong, one step at a time. Our topic today is vitamin K2 and its relationship as an essential nutrient to our overall good health. And our guest today is Dr. Kate Rionbleu. Dr. Kate is a naturopathic doctor, is a sought-after speaker, and is a frequent guest on both radio and television, and is the author of the book Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox. Dr. Kate, welcome back to Insights for Health.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You were here last month, and we talked about that specifically, is vitamin K2 and the calcium, in its relationship to calcium. And if the listener didn't hear that show, you can visit our website at thehealthyhabitchatham.com and click on radio show, and you can hear that entire interview. So, doctor, just to recap, what is the calcium paradox?
Well, it's a situation in which calcium can be our friend and our foe. We definitely need to have calcium in our bodies in the right places, in our bones and our teeth. And we don't want it to be building up in other places like our arteries or kidneys, breast tissue, places like this where it does have a tendency to deposit. And then it can be, well, ranging from mild problems to severe life-threatening problems, for example, increasing the risk of heart attack and stroke. So there's a double-edged sword when it comes to calcium.
And what does K2 do for us then? Because that's the main topic here. We want to know what K2 is going to do and why we need it and, so it's moving calcium around, but it's doing a lot of other things as well.
Exactly. K2 does many things, but what it's best known for is keeping calcium in its place. So it makes sure that calcium is always our friend and never our foe, keeps it on our side. By taking calcium and guiding it into our bones and teeth where we want it, and keeping it out of, as well as removing it from, soft tissues like our arteries where we don't want to have it. That's a big factor in what vitamin K2 does in our health.
So it's activating, again, back to our last show, you had mentioned that it's activating these different groups of proteins so it can do that.
Exactly. So these are, you can think of them as little snowplows, that they're just sitting around doing nothing, and K2 comes in and turns them on, and then they will start clearing the way, keeping calcium out of arteries, for example, in areas we don't want it, and then sort of pushing it and bulldozing it into our bones where we need it.
So this one group of proteins deposits it into our bones, another group of proteins removes it from our soft tissues.
Exactly. Those proteins are always circulating, ready to do this job, but they can't work and they can't do that job if we are low in vitamin K2.
So bone health, we hear about osteoporosis, we're trying to be proactive, we'll take a calcium supplement, but that can be good and bad.
Exactly. Studies have shown that people who take calcium supplements unfortunately have 20 to 30% greater risk of heart attack and stroke. So that shows that calcium isn't necessarily always getting to the right places, or it can get into the wrong places. So we have to remember, if calcium is low in our bones, as it can be with osteoporosis, it's not calcium's fault. And taking more calcium isn't necessarily the solution to that problem, whereas keeping the calcium that we have in our body, in our diet, in the right places, this is where vitamin K2 comes in.
So to prevent a knee-jerk reaction, we don't want to stop taking calcium, or we don't want to avoid calcium. We need to be supplementing that either by diet or specific supplements with K2.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't recommend a calcium supplement to everybody all the time, or, for example, all women all the time. Some people think, women just all need a calcium supplement. That's not the case. But if you have osteopenia or osteoporosis, then there is a place for a small amount of additional calcium, especially if your diet may be low in calcium for some reason. than a little bit. But, you know, 500 milligrams a day tops, and that's quite a bit lower than the recommendations you typically hear. But the key, again, is to not the amount of calcium you take, but having some vitamin D so you absorb the calcium, and then the vitamin K2, which will take that calcium that's been absorbed and put it into the right places.
So making sure it's doing the job.
Exactly.
Last show we talked about bone health and heart health. And again, I'm going to refer back to the listener that they can visit our website and hear that show in its entirety. But let's move on from that to what else does vitamin K do? Like it does so much more. I mean, it's incredible the amount of places that it shows up to our benefit for our overall health.
It is. So, you know, when we're still looking at the calcium-moving benefits of vitamin K2, that is helpful not just for the health of our bones and arteries, but also our veins. So you're looking at, for example, varicose veins that can be related to calcium building up in the walls of the veins in a similar way they do in the walls of the arteries, and that can be problematic, as well as oral health, dental health. That's a topic that's of particular interest to me. And I've seen remarkable results in terms of different aspects of oral health, improvements in gum health, you know, gingivitis, periodontitis, people improving the bone density in their jaw. And this, of course, is very important for children in terms of oral health, cavity prevention, that kind of thing. Vitamin K2, in addition to its effects on calcium, has been shown to help improve insulin sensitivity. So this has potential benefit for diabetics, as well prostate health. So cancer, prevention, protection. Vitamin K2 plays a role in cell growth regulation, which means making sure cells aren't growing out of control. When you hear that, that's, you know, cancer prevention and protection. All different kinds of cancer, but especially prostate seems to be a big one. So for prostate cancer, as well as BPH, so prostate enlargement, then a K2 plays a potentially very useful role.
So how common is, and again, before I ask this question, I'm going to preface it by saying I want to come back to that list that you just gave us.
There's a lot of things, yeah.
Maybe after the commercial, but until then, let's... Can you explain why is K2 deficiency so common?
That's a great question. So we've heard vitamin D deficiency is common, and we typically attribute that to lifestyles, which include, you know, us covering up and not getting a lot of sun exposure and living in areas where the sun isn't strong throughout the winter. Our reasons why that vitamin K2 deficiency is widespread are quite different, and it has to do with the changing of our diets over the last century or so. Because animals are not out on the pasture eating grass like they once did, that has really reduced the vitamin K2 in our foods. So a regular store-bought egg, for example, the yolk will have a smidgen of vitamin K2 in it. You probably have to eat about a dozen of those per day to get a worthwhile amount of vitamin K2. But a grass-fed egg, especially in the summertime, at certain points in the summer, just two of those would have a significant amount of vitamin K2 in them. Of course, we don't have the luxury of having access to these kinds of grass-fed foods year-round, or in some cases at all now, because we've taken animals off the pasture and confined them to grain feeding to increase yields. But that has decreased our K2 intake. So that's one big factor in why K2 has decreased in our diet, as well as eating less fermented food. So there are certain types of bacteria that make vitamin K2, which means that certain types of fermented foods, not all, some types of cheeses, for example, are high in vitamin K2, and we're not eating a lot of those.
What kind of cheeses, for example?
Well, Gouda and Brie cheese, for some reason, the bacteria that make those cheeses make a lot of vitamin K2. So those are always good sources. Again, doesn't matter if the milk is grass-fed or not. That's not the point here. It's the bacteria that are making that. So any kind of Gouda or Brie cheese you can find in the grocery store will have vitamin K2 in it. And cheddar, for example, has a smidgen of K2, not a lot. Yogurt doesn't have any because the bacteria that make yogurt don't make that nutrient.
Okay, so grass-fed versus grain-fed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. We've been all the grocery store providers, I guess, of good meats and foods are using an industrial style of production to provide our meat. That's all grain fed. This grass fed, the animal is getting the K from the grass, the chlorophyll, et cetera, and they're converting it.
Exactly. Okay. Animals are quite good at doing this, herbivores. People aren't. So, for example, we couldn't eat a lot of green leafy vegetables and turn the vitamin K1 into the vitamin K2 that we need.
So that's why we'll never have a shortage of K1.
Exactly. It's very, very easy. And it's recycled in the body. It's impossible to be deficient in vitamin K1, just about impossible. But K2 deficiency is very easy because it's more challenging to get in the diet, and we don't make enough to meet our own needs.
Okay. So, Doctor, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd really like you to revisit those other ailments that K2 are associated with, especially the deficiency of K2 and how it can help.
Sure. Sounds good.